Hello, I'm Dr. Stephen Hassan with another episode of The Influence Continuum. And I am honored to have a colleague and friend, major figure in my mind in the world of communication, Anthony Davis, is with me today. I've been grateful to be on Anthony's show, and Anthony's doing incredible shows on the Midas Touch Network. Network that my podcast is on as well, but he's got a video channel that's millions of people are listening to him and his analyses. I want to say Anthony is a British broadcaster, journalist, voiceover artist, born in London, and came to the U.S. in 2017, based in L.A. now. And I enjoyed visiting you in real life and actually having dinner together. And we just really hit it off. And I said, Anthony, you have to come on the Influence Continuum. I want my network to know more about your good work. So the weekend show, he's done other shows as well, 5 Minute News. Anthony Davis, thanks so much.
Thank you, Stephen. It's great to be here. Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, when I moved to the U.S. with my family, it wasn't really with the intention of continuing my work in journalism. I wanted just to be a dad. Mm. And I realized, weirdly, there was a gap in the market for the kind of journalism we do in the U.K., mm-hmm. which has to be fact-based. It's not opinion. It's just based in truth, because you lose your license in England if you just have an opinion. It's not kind of how it works. And so it's very interesting to kind of come here and do British-style journalism for an American audience.
Yeah, and I'll just say we used to have better rules and regulations,
right. Yeah.
And they got dismantled by the GOP over decades of whittling away at the standards of evidence to the absurd point where they are talking about alternative facts, which for the rest of us are lies. Or disinformation, right?
That was a weird time, wasn't it? When because that was Kellyanne Conway, of course, who coined that phrase, and that was a weird time because up until that moment, you know, you still kind of could tell fantasy from reality,
right?
But it was that coupled with Sean Spicer lying about the crowd size on the first press conference under the Trump presidency. Where people like me, who've spent a lifetime, you know, trying to do fact-based news,
right.
were like, hang on a second, you mean that there's a parallel universe that I didn't know about, where these people are existing and they are, where, you know, their life bears no resemblance to the rest of us who live in reality. They're very happy to be comfortable in that space. And recently I had a realization, which I'm very interested in your theory on.
Sure.
Which is that, you know, we try and put Donald Trump into a box of reality and normality. And so that's why he's always breaking convention for us. But to him, that's his reality.
Yeah.
And so he's always broken convention, but to him it's normal. He's always broken the law. He's always been a, you know, lifetime fraudster, criminal, whatever you want to say. So he genuinely doesn't see it as wrong.
Right.
And that is the thing that I've kind of only realized relatively recently, that we need to stop trying to judge him by our standards.
Oh, absolutely. All I can say is I'm a New Yorker. I grew up 1.3 miles from Donald Trump, in fact, on the poor side of Union Turnpike. He was in Jamaica Estates.
Right.
But we New Yorkers saw him as a philanderer, a scoundrel, a very superficial, glossy, you know, wanting attention, egomaniac. And so for me, that's my baseline on Donald Trump. But in researching my book, The Cult of Trump, I came to understand, like, he was indoctrinated into an ideology of you're either a predator or a prey. You're either eating people or being eaten, and you never want to be eaten, so you're always eating on other people, which is, for normal people, like, not remotely healthy, normal consciousness.
Yeah.
And he grew up with the Norman Vincent Peale church, where you believe 100% and good things will happen and doubt is sin. And so this is part of the cult playbook of you create your own reality and you make everybody who believes you and trusts you, you indoctrinate them into surrendering their own power of analysis and critical thinking and conscience in order to bow to the daddy figure who says, I know it all. I know more than the generals and I know more than the economists. He's an uneducated person. And I truly don't think he's a mastermind. People keep saying he's a genius. And he has cleverness about manipulation and communication. But I think he's a puppet of very powerful people with agendas, like wanting to keep fossil fuels at the fore, as just one right. example.
And Russia, of course. I mean, we've seen Tucker Carlson recently go to interview Vladimir Putin and claim that he's the only Western journalist who's bothered to do that, which is A, inaccurate, but B, the only reason Putin's welcoming Tucker Carlson is because Tucker Carlson's on the team.
Right.
And it is so shocking to me that the United States has pivoted to a point that many Congress people on the right, as well as the disgraced former president, they do not see the Kremlin as the enemy. That they are very happy to befriend him and to kind of have him, have people get used to Putin as a friend and not a foe. To the exception that they paint Vladimir Zelensky as the enemy,
yeah,
and Putin as the friend, and that in itself is, you know, that is a huge shift to have happened in such a short time.
Yeah,
because I don't remember there being much pro-Russia propaganda prior to Donald Trump. And well, yet here we are.
But I would say that Putin spent over $100 million on a Washington, D.C. PR firm over 10 years, cultivating, yeah, lobbying, et cetera. And my understanding, again, from my research for the cult of Trump and since, it's the Christian right that wants to dismantle a strong central government with regulations, wants to diminish women's right to choose their health care. They want to diminish gay rights, and they want to enforce their perspective on Christianity, which is deliberately to destroy the separation of church and state and do this Christian nationalist. And in that way, Putin has infiltrated, also with the NRA and such. The Christian right thinks that Putin is a man of God, as they think Trump is a man of God,
yeah,
because he's homophobic, because he uses the Russian Orthodox Church as his propaganda tool and of control, and delegitimizes any other religious group in Russia.
But it's already happened, you know, that this former separation of church and state is over. You know, the moment that we got Mike Johnson, who is himself a far-right Christian nationalist, as the Speaker of the House, I mean, he invited, what's that pastor's name? Is it Jack Hibbs? He invited the other day to come in and give the prayers before Congress started. I mean, this guy, I'd actually made a video about him, is, you know, I showed videos of him talking about trans people in the most aggressive an offensive language,
yep,
referring to them as, you know, the devil and all of this stuff. And the fact that people like that are being invited into the very heart of American democracy, supposedly, means that the shift has already happened. And I don't know about you, but I do feel that there is a certain denial amongst American people and American journalists where they keep talking about the threat that democracy could fall. Well, it already fell, babes. You know, it fell when Trump decided to overturn the election and claim that the election was stolen, and then, you know, obviously instigated the riot. That was a coup.
Yeah.
And in fact, it started before that, when he started spreading, you know, very subtle rumors that, well, if I don't win, it must be fraud. And then, of course, all the stuff with COVID and how, you know, they blame that Dropbox is, you know, all the advances that were made for voting that should have been there before COVID anyway, but allowing people to vote, extending hours and proxy voting, also all extra stuff, which is normal in most countries. I mean, mail-in voting is normal in most countries. And the GOP weaponized it and claimed that in some way it was fraudulent. And so US democracy has already fallen. The freedoms that we have enjoyed have already fallen. We've already fallen to the power of a dictator when he's like, I'm going to be a dictator for a day or on day one. He was already a dictator for 4 years. Like, did you forget that?
Right.
Did you forget people being plucked off of the streets of Portland who were peacefully protesting by military personnel in unmarked, you know, military fatigues with no details on them, being put into rental cars that were non-military vehicles or non-police vehicles? I mean, have people forgotten that stuff? So that is really my concern, is that, you know, for me to try and be the voice of reason, it's like, what are you trying to save yourself from? It already happened.
So I'm going to push back a little bit, my friend, and say that
you are an American.
I am an American, and I, you know, lived through, in many ways, the glory of days of America, prosperity and world authority and power. And I know that it's in descendancy, but I wouldn't use the past tense that it's fallen, as if there's nothing we can do about it to reverse this decline that we are in. So I'm still hoping that good people will rise up to the challenge. I know I'm not giving up.
Well, the vote is the only thing left, though, isn't it? You know, ultimately, the vote. If Donald Trump is on the ballot, which I think he will be, then the only way to overcome this particular chapter in American history is to vote so furiously that he doesn't stand a chance of winning.
Correct.
Because all other options have expired. I mean, he was in the Supreme Court was arguing whether or not he was an insurrectionist the other day, and all of the conservative justices were trying to save their man.
Yeah, I don't call them conservatives, frankly. They're federalist society, right wing,
the extremists in. And so the judiciary has failed, and that's supposed to be one of the, you know.
And I'll push back again. There was a three-panel judge, two Democratic appointees, and a Republican that said that he wasn't above the law in a reasoned thing. I listened to George Conway, who wrote an Atlantic article on this. Was a really well-reasoned, airtight judgment.
Absolutely.
He thinks, and I heard Hillary Clinton say that he thinks there's a good chance that the Supreme Court will pass and just let the appellate decision stand.
Which would be great.
Which would be great, because we do need, you know, if the Supreme Court says yes, the President of the United States can hire, you know, tell SEAL Team 6 to assassinate an opponent, and there's no accountability, then we've lost democracy 100%. And but I also want to just say for my listeners, I got interested in this whole topic of cults because of the Moonies, because I was in the room with Sun Myung Moon as he said American democracy is satanic and we have to infiltrate Congress and we have to change democracy to be a theocracy, and we'll change the Constitution and make it a capital offense for people who do things that have sex outside of the unification arranged marriages, and I believe that nonsense until my deprogramming. But back to Washington, D.C., Moon was crowned the Messiah in the Dirksen Senate office building with Congress people bringing him a crown. So, again, I have this, bias from my own life experience that that there have been efforts for 50 years, all the years I've been speaking out against mind control cults, 50 years long game to dismantle the checks and balances, to take out the accountability pieces. And it's going to take a bunch of years to put them back in place. But my hope is we win a supermajority. We codify Roe v. Wade. We maybe expand the Supreme Court or do something to create a more representative justice system, or impeach people who, like Amy Coney Barrett. I did a whole thing when she was nominated about the People of Praise as a mind control cult, where women have to listen to their husbands. And I'm like, how are we putting this person on the Supreme Court? Anyway, I'm going on too much.
Putting her on the Supreme Court with just a few days to go till the end of Trump's presidency. Yeah. That was the other thing, right. You know, just like crowbarring her in.
Right.
I hear what you're saying, but I also recognize that you and I are on the outside of that Capitol Hill bubble. Mm. Where a lot of this stuff is already in place. So, you know, I mean, we saw them all praying before session recently. Mm. That photograph went viral of Mike Johnson and, you know, all on their knees and praying in Congress. And if you've heard him be interviewed, he talks about the fact that the founders never wanted the separation of church and state. He claims that they built America as a Christian country. And that, you know, the laws and the Congress had to kind of follow the kind of Christian teachings. That is very much Mike Johnson's view, as he admitted. You know, you want to know what I think? Just take a copy of the Bible off your shelf and read it. Well, I don't have a copy of the Bible on my shelf, so obviously, even there, he's presuming that everybody does.
I actually do, and Jesus said explicitly, "Stay out of politics." Right, render exactly. Unto Caesar what is Caesar, yeah. And it's harder for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to go through the eye of a needle. It may have been a mistranslation of camel, but the idea yeah. is opposite of this prosperity ministry, send me your money and let me buy a third jet and get another mansion. And you're in credit card debt giving donations to these so-called prophets and apostles who told them that Donald Trump won in 2020. So the hell with everybody else, even the Trump appointees who were in charge of the election and all the 40 plus judges that said, no, Biden won. They are in another universe. I wouldn't call it parallel. I'd call it a cult universe or a cultiverse mindset.
Yeah. Well, it's like a sub society.
Yeah.
But it coexists.
Right.
And I'm, you know, and even these pastors up and down the country who are doing their sermons at evangelical churches and the churches are huge, some of them. I mean, I'm very interested in this concept of preachers in sneakers, they call them. You know, these kind of modern preachers who drive Teslas and, you know, they wear their Converse and they kind of very well dressed. And the production value, I try to watch some of these sermons on YouTube where the production value with the band, the live band and the music swelling as the preacher is getting, you know, and a lot of this obviously came out of the black church, and that was done with good intentions.
Right.
But I think that it's got to a point now where the production value is like, it's almost overwhelming the message. And I live near one of these modern churches, which, you know, I don't have a problem with any religion, provided it's done in a kind of, you know, respectful and moderate way, and where people are free to leave as well as join,
right.
And people aren't fleeced for all of their money and where politics doesn't enter the frame.
Right.
And unfortunately, up and down the country, especially in the Bible Belt, the Rust Belt, and Middle America, these sermons are entirely political now.
Right.
And you know, that really is what's most concerning, is that people are being brainwashed not just by their preacher, but also by the radio that they listen to, the TV that they watch, and then the messaging from their political leaders. And so it is a multi-pronged approach to the brainwashing. And as well as the algorithm on social media.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to say the obvious. Yeah, people are on their phones.
The information silo on their phones.
Yeah, they're on their phones and they're getting it 8, 10, 12 hours a day reinforcing the lies. And we know the brain responds if they hears it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It starts to assume that it's true and when it's not. Yeah. And Hitler knew that.
And I'm a big fan of Steve Jobs, the advent of the smartphone, but I do recognize, because, I used to talk about the internet as being the devil's work, because, organizations like Al-Qaeda, they grew because of the internet.
Right.
They had a place to meet. They never met in person, in the same way that Trump would claim that Antifa is an organization, and it's not. It's just people who are anti-fascist. Right. Hopefully you and I are fully paid up members of the anti-fascist brigade.
I've never paid anything to Antifa, but
are you not card carrying?
I'm definitely anti-authoritarianism in any shape or form. But
this is the thing, he designated Antifa as a terrorist organization when they didn't exist.
Yep.
And so that is how far this big lie goes. It's to create a whole narrative that is beyond reality, started with crowd size, became alternative facts, and now it's like, well, who do you believe? Well, I still have a barometer.
Yeah.
And you do too.
Yeah.
And that moral compass that is a natural barometer for what is facts versus bullshit is something that I think we really need to learn how to hold on to.
Exactly. And I need to add QAnon, And
the PSYOPs,
all the Democrats are trafficking children and draining their blood for adrenochrome and all of that.
And killing babies at 9 months.
The Russian model for doing propaganda disinformation campaigns is you throw out a million BS things and see what sticks. And then you amplify. And they're monetizing Americans to be promulgators of these crazy beliefs. So they are in their own bubble going, well, I'm making a living selling t-shirts, or I'm making a living, with likes. And so the corruption element over values is another piece of this puzzle. Anthony, I'm just like, we need to think about planetary survival as a goal and work backwards from that instead of being focused on the past and wanting to project into the past and say the founders didn't want a separation of church and state. Read the Federalist Papers, like understand the history, real history, and that's nonsense. That's just not true. But going forward, we need to have a path. And I'm very opinionated, as you know. You've had me on your show a couple of times. I want to teach everyone about the influence continuum and the bite model and the characteristics of malignant narcissists. I want to tell people, listen, it's your mind. You should control it. Don't let the media control you. Don't let the pastor control you. You need to get back to your conscience. Like, would you ever enter a business relationship with a known liar who you know is going to cheat you? Like, would a person say, oh, yeah, I like to go into business with someone who's going to ruin my life? No, they would. They would say, of course I wouldn't. But these dots need to be connected. And before we started recording, you were telling me about former members of MAGA that are now speaking out. And that's another piece for me of the solution, is destigmatizing the fact that intelligent people can be indoctrinated to believe crap, but then come back to reality and go, no.
I think that with Donald Trump, there is now so much stuff surrounding him in terms of the number of court hearings and court appearances and the fact that the Supreme Court is involved now. And so it's going to be increasingly difficult for right-wing media to shield their viewers from this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
because there is simply so much of it. I mean, they're the biggest stories of the day. I mean, Trump recently was found that, you know, he can't be, let me get his appeal right. His appeal was that he did not instigate the insurrection, right? That was what he was kind of asking for. And therefore he can be on the ballot. And the argument was that he shouldn't be on the ballot. And of course, that's what the Supreme Court was hearing recently. And so the point is that even that conversation, should Donald Trump be on the ballot because he instigated an insurrection, is suddenly going to have to be in the conscience, the public conscience, by nature of the fact that that is the biggest story of the month, right? And so there's no hiding that. It's not a trivial thing like crowd size at his inauguration. It's massive. So even Fox is going to have to cover that story. Sure, they're going to skew it, but the fact is that the fact that he's even up in front of a judge or a jury or the Supreme Court hearing these arguments, I think it's a different dynamic to how it was in 2016.
Yep.
You know, in 2016, it was like a blank canvas. Trump was kind of coming in with a clean slate. You knew, and I knew, Hillary Clinton knew, but a lot of people didn't. And so they gave him the benefit of the doubt. And obviously those 4 years made it very clear who he is and what he's capable of. And that is why he didn't win in 2020. And that is why he probably won't win again.
And many of his internal cabinet said he's a moron.
That was Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, but I mean, Bill Barr said he's dangerous. Yeah. You know, we should be anywhere near the presidency. Bill Barr?
Yeah, he ain't no superstar himself.
No, he's absolutely not. But I was just, that's a lot of religious right in Bill Barr with the Opus Dei board of directors. Right. And he's saying that and I just want to comment that the Koch Super PAC, and I've done a number of blogs and interviews on the second largest private corporation in the United States, the Kochs, with their fossil fuels and many other things. They're backing Nikki Haley. So do they know something, or are they just hedging their bets? But I don't think they're spending their money in vain. And then I'll add one more piece of chatter that I'm hearing from my colleagues who are researching open source research amongst the right wing chatter about how great it would be if Donald Trump was assassinated, because he'd become a martyr for the cause. Yeah. And me hearing that was like major alarm bells. No one should be talking about killing anybody.
Well, he is already laying the groundwork for, I'm doing this for you.
Right.
You know, they want to get you, but I'm standing in their way because I won't let them. And so he's positioning himself as a martyr. So maybe he knows something that we don't, you know, because if the hamburgers haven't killed him by now, something's got to.
I can go in so many directions with that one, but I guess we still have a bunch of months till the election, and I really want to, for anyone listening to me, be more positive that we can't just expect other people to roll up their sleeves and be involved with getting a massive turnout in votes around the country.
Yeah, the vote is the most important thing.
Right.
Fundamentally, it's like there is nothing else. I mean, you don't even have to like be an activist and take to the streets, provided you show up on voting day to a polling place. Right, it's like it's the number of votes ultimately that is going to sway this. The downside is we have the Electoral College system, which is skewed towards Republicans, and there are a number of tricks that have been going on in the background, such as the gerrymandering and the redrawing of boundary lines and districts and the like, that will give Republicans an upper hand with the Electoral College, and so all the more reason to have everybody get out and vote and to really pay attention to the system and be strategic.
Right.
Therefore.
Right. So, Anthony, I interviewed Alva Johnson, who I want to suggest you have on your show. Alva basically was in the Trump campaign in 2015 and 16, and she just talked about how they had RVs, recreational vehicles, and they created all these subgroups like bikers for Trump, vets for Trump, women for Trump, and they would drive into communities that have never heard from any politicians and win people over and then get them on their app. And so, in other words, what she was saying is we got a lot of people to register to vote that had never voted, and they're still following the Trump train. And so her idea is to reverse engineer and go out and find people who are not registered to vote, register them, and give them a reason to want to vote and empower that. So that makes a lot of sense to me too. And the thing that worries me the most is the tech billionaires who own the social media platforms that don't want regulation. They're not going to back a Biden administration that wants regulation for their own self-interest. So I'm worried about the social media piece a lot.
We should also consider that the most powerful and richest man in the world right now is Elon Musk, who hasn't yet lent his support to Donald Trump, but undoubtedly will. Once he starts tweeting campaign videos, explicit support of Donald Trump, once he starts, because the whole algorithm of X is built around Elon Musk's tweets, which is why there's
been
this huge shift to the,
by
to
the way,
far
on
right.
X. Yeah. I haven't gained any followers since he bought it.
And so you don't spend $44 billion on a platform that isn't worth a quarter of that unless you have a long-term plan.
Right.
And I have no doubt that once the campaign really ramps up in the last kind of 4 or 3 months ahead of the vote, that we'll see people like Elon Musk and Tucker Carlson and all of these characters who have a following will throw so much of their weight behind Trump and all of the dirty tricks towards Biden.
Yep.
You know, the memes about him looking old and stuttering, everything else, it's going to get really dirty. Yeah. It's going to be a fight to the death. And I've said before that, I see American politics as like a blood sport. That's kind of how it's played out here. it's sad, but I recognize that there are, between now and then, and I don't want to sound negative about this because, I think, I worry that you think I'm being too pessimistic. I do trust that the American people will do the right thing. They did so in 2020. It's not a choice between Trump the dictator and Biden. It's a choice between dictatorship and democracy.
Exactly.
It's right.
100%.
Forget Biden. Biden is just the torchbearer right now. But, he is not what you're voting for.
1,000%.
You're voting for your freedom. You're voting for the right to vote. If Trump wins, you'll never get a free vote ever again. So that for me is the difference.
Yep.
And that should be the messaging. You choose dictatorship or democracy. You choose fascism or freedom. Pick one, because no matter which side politically you're on, it's irrelevant. You're not going to have sides politically going forward. I mean, even, and here's on a slight tangent, Trump doesn't believe in climate change, nor do the Republican Party, right? So you're not even going to have a planet with any polling places left in a few years' time if you choose Donald Trump, because he'll gut the EPA, he'll continue to mine for fossil fuels, and the planet will, the loss of the planet will heat up, the ocean sea levels will rise, and before you know it, we'll have mass climate migration.
Right.
And parts of the planet that are simply uninhabitable, and a lot of those people are going to come to America. They're already coming.
Right.
They're already coming. And so that is the other thing, is that we're so distracted with this idiot, this kind of orange idiot, and his narcissistic personality disorder, that we have had to put climate change on the back burner Stephen, like, arguably a bigger threat than the loss of democracy is the loss of the planet, and we have literally had to put it on ice, if you'd pardon the pun, whilst we deal with this short-term danger, yeah, which is the rise of fascism.
Yes, 1,000%.
That is a tragedy, because if you look to Scandinavia and to beautiful countries like, you know, Sweden or Norway, the work that they are doing, both as social democracies, but also as very climate-conscious countries, yep, is magnificent.
Right.
It's beautiful. And Americans haven't got a clue about that system,
right,
about how well it works.
Right. So, you know? Anthony, I recently read a book by David Lipoff. It's called The Parrot and the Igloo, and it's on climate science denial.
Yeah.
The history of climate science denial. And guess what I learned? The Moonies have been the center for disinformation for 50 years since I was, yeah, recruited. And, yeah, they were using the big tobacco playbook to hire so-called experts to say, no, we don't know for sure that smoking causes cancer. They've been using, in many cases, the same people, putting them on the payroll, saying, no, there's no evidence that there's human-made, you know, global warming. And they continue to do it. And I see ads for Chevron, we're helping the environment. And,
yeah, they talk about carbon capture and all of this stuff, which is a distraction,
right,
from the fact that they're drilling more than ever.
Right. 1,000%. You know,
they have known, there was a study out a few weeks ago that showed that they have the fossil fuel companies, the energy companies, the oil companies, they were doing their own research about carbon and emissions back in the 1940s. So they've known for that long that the planet is heating up as a result of their own efforts, and yet they hid it.
Yep.
And in fact, they're the ones behind the negative propaganda about electric cars. And you hear Trump going on, oh, what do you want an electric car for? It'll only go 150 miles and then it's, you know, and it's simply not true, right? It is simply not true. Electric cars now will do 300-400 miles on a charge. But that is, I mean, how far do you want to drive, for goodness sake? But that aside, there is a huge secondhand market, a used market for electric vehicles, which means that the price of them, I mean, I bought an electric vehicle on Craigslist for $4,000. And it's 10 years old, and it's great. Hmm. And so I haven't been to a gas station for years, but I recognize that the brainwashing and the propaganda about how it's not masculine to drive an electric vehicle. You're going to end up being able to hear Republicans coming because they'll be the only ones with a combustion engine, Stephen, right? That propaganda changed a little when Elon Musk came out as a kind of right-wing character, because, you know, prior to that rise, when people thought that he was like a solar electric guy who was just wanting to save the planet, before, we kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt. I'd read that he'd been a donor to the Republican Party, and I was like, oh, that doesn't kind of make sense. Mm. And now, of course, we know who he really is. And so it all makes sense. And I enjoy watching videos of people in their frozen Teslas where they can't get the door open because there's no handle. But we are living in this weird kind of split society where people are, like, they want to go electric, but they kind of can't because politically, is it the right thing to do? What are the neighbors going to say? And then there's all the negative propaganda about it. And it's like, it's so weird that it's come down to cars.
Right.
It should never be about cars.
But coming back to your point about the fossil fuel industry knowing that it was going to heat, yeah, up the planet, I interviewed, yeah, Christopher Leonard, who wrote a book called Cokeland about the corporate,
yes,
cult.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
he described one of the insiders doing a whole analysis for the corporation that we can, yeah, make a shift away from fossil fuels, and here's how to do it. And he was let go. You, yeah, know, they didn't.
They can make a huge profit out of renewables if they chose to change their business,
right,
model. but there are shareholders involved. I mean, there are some things that, in my opinion, should not be for profit,
yeah.
right? Energy is one yep. of them. It should not be for profit. Healthcare is another, and education. These things should not be for profit, and you will have a much kinder, more civil society. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at the profits being made by, I mean, what was I looking at the other week? It was United Healthcare, one of the big healthcare companies. They made more money during the pandemic than they've ever made, like literally tens of billions of dollars in profit. And yet the cost, I mean, I just got healthcare for my family. It's ridiculous, the cost of it, you know? And that's not even for like gold standard. Mm. And I was like, it is insane that this is even allowed to happen.
Yeah.
And yet people, it is normalized and people have got used to it because they don't look to other nations for inspiration.
Right.
Because America is king.
Well, you know, I go back to greed, corporate greed.
Yes. Corporate greed, yeah.
And not really thinking that they have an obligation to the greater community that they depend on.
But how do we celebrate America as being the greatest country in the world, which it has given itself a reputation for being,
right.
and at the same time have to qualify the fact that there is no healthcare system here, that their education system is on its knees, that there's no welfare state or, you know, any kind of support system for people who are struggling. You know, people living on disability are literally barely getting by. Mm-hmm. It is, and the way that workers are treated, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that people don't get sick days, you know, paid sick days. You know, in Europe, you have as many paid sick days as you need.
Right.
They don't run out where you're suddenly like, oh, I can't get sick anymore.
Right.
You know, or look at maternity. You should get your entire maternity paid and off.
Right.
And so should the dad or whoever the partner is.
Right.
And in many countries, they do.
Right.
And so... And also just the number of hours that people work.
Yeah.
You know, I worked in Norway for a while when I was much younger. And they have a very interesting work day. You know, they start at 7 a.m. and they finish at 3 p.m. and they don't take a lunch break. And, you know, you have lunch, but you take it with you and you eat at your mm-hmm. desk. And you work straight through. A lot of it is to do with the light. You know, there's not that much light. But at 3 o'clock, everybody leaves and goes back to be with their families at home. And so you have a communal meal and the family is put first and the employer does not have the right to contact you after hours.
Right.
And again, the advent of the smartphone has made us all a slave to our bosses. You know, they expect us to be on call 24/7, which is just weird. And so in the US, people have started to boast about how little sleep they get and how hard they work. And Arianna Huffington has a really good TED talk about this. She says, you know, why are people boasting about how little sleep they got? Hmm. She's like, I don't want people working for me who haven't slept. And you know, I don't take Uber so much anymore, but when I used to take Uber in London, I would have drivers like falling asleep at the wheel. Hmm. And I'd say, is this the end of your shift? Yeah. How long you been driving? I've done 18 hours. And I'm like, let me out. I'm going to get another
Uber. Kidding. Sleep deprivation is one of the universal mind control techniques of destructive cults,
it's torture, isn't it?
And we need, for our immune system, 7 to 9 hours of sleep. So we have all these people with illnesses and autoimmune dysfunction, and people aren't looking to the fact that they need 7 to 9 hours of sleep, which means they have to schedule when they go to sleep and when they wake up. And, you know, make it cool and dark and all the good things for sleep hygiene.
Because it's important. But isn't it crazy that people in the workplace, not all people, but some people, invariably men, are boasting about how little sleep they get? I mean, famously in the UK, Margaret Thatcher, who was the first female prime minister, we had a female running the country in 1979.
Right.
Look how progressive we were. But she used to sleep three or four hours a night, and that was kind of famous that she could run the country and have 3 or 4 hours sleep. But in hindsight, I'm like, oh, you know, this is not a good way to live.
No.
And so to have a holistic life or attitude to life requires employers to have a holistic attitude to life. Some of the new employers are, weirdly, you know, Google and Apple, they are making more effort to you know, they provide childcare services in their offices, and, you know, you can work from home a couple of days a week.
Right.
I mean, you know, they are, some of them are. I don't think Amazon is, but
yeah.
some of them are.
I think it's refreshing to hear a British person who's come here tell Americans, hey, you know, you're accepting things as normal that aren't normal in other parts of the world. And think about it in terms of quality of life. And I remember in the 70s, my oldest sister got married to a doctor, an MD, and he's like, we need single-payer health and, you know, healthcare. It'll drive the costs down. You know, and it won't make two-tier thing for very rich people can have concierge services and everybody else waits online, etc. But it's gotten worse. It hasn't gotten better.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not here to criticize the U.S. I choose to live in the U.S. and I choose to bring my family up in the U.S. And, you know, it's taken me, I've been here for 8 years, it's taken me this long to just kind of work out what's going on and what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because of my experience in the UK, which has free healthcare, it's not great, but emergency medicine is fantastic. And if you showed up in the UK and you were sick, you, Stephen, could come and get healthcare for free. You wouldn't have to show ID. You wouldn't have to give a credit card. They just check you out and they fix you up and send you on your way. That's the way healthcare should be. No one should be profiting, let alone profiteering from healthcare. And it's the same with education. I mean, I live in California. I once was viewing a public school for my kids, and I said, do you teach Spanish? And they were like, no. And I was like, why? These kids, they're like 4, 5, 6 years of age, they'll pick up Spanish in minutes.
Right.
And there's a million Spanish people here. California, what was Mexico?
Yeah.
Got stolen.
Right.
Got stolen. Teach Spanish.
Right.
You know, they said to me, the principal said to me, no one's ever asked that question before.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And I was like, whoa. And yet, if you were come to European countries, France, Spain, certainly the Scandi countries, undoubtedly, the Netherlands, any of these places, everybody speaks English as well as their native language.
Right.
It is baked into the curriculum and it is essential. You've got to have languages. And again, this all kind of builds into American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
It's like English is obviously an international language and so there is an inherent laziness. It's like, well, they should learn our language. Why should we learn theirs? Learn Mandarin. If you want to learn a language now, learn Mandarin. That, you know, you're going to need it. It's so interesting how this kind of isolationist attitude is fine if you have a good progressive leader in charge. Mm. But the moment that you have someone like Trump, who is an America first kind of guy, all of this goes to hell and becomes problematic and very dangerous, and it prevents people from traveling. I mean, banning Muslims from coming into the U.S. I mean, there's 2 billion Muslims on this planet.
Right.
You're saying 2 billion Muslims shouldn't be able to come and take a vacation because you know, you thought that 9/11 was a Muslim thing?
Yeah.
It's like...
I actually did a Huffington Post blog in 2015 when he first said that. And I said something like, ISIS's greatest recruiter, Donald Trump. That was the gist of the article. I had 200 attacks, like almost within 2 hours. I had 5 people say, you know, thank you for writing this. The rest were, and I didn't even realize back in 2015, there are bots or there are troll armies from Putin and other people who will want to, you know, neutralize any messaging that talks about him helping ISIS, right? But I'm very grateful to you. I'm going to ask you, you know, you've been interviewing fascinating people. What are some of the high points in your career since you've come to the U.S. on the Midas Touch Network, people that were really fascinating, interesting, that you think the public needs to know more from?
I think people like Jared Yates Sexton's been on my show a few times now. He's written two or three really good books on neoliberalism and understanding how America has changed. And, you know, he's somebody who I'll never tire of. I mean, I don't really say much when I have him on, to be honest. I'm just all ears because, you know, some people have an amazing grasp for the depths of American history and culture and, you know, learning how so much goes back to slavery. Mm. And for me, having people on who can talk about the African-American experience, the Black American experience, mm-hmm. and how if you see the United States through the lens of a Black American, it looks completely different right. to the, you know, the white privilege that many people take for granted. Mm-hmm. And so really that's my greatest interest when I talk to people who have that perspective, because I've actually come to believe that Black Americans, especially Black women in America, are so much more evolved than their male white counterparts when it comes to certain things mm-hmm. in society. Mm-hmm. Look at Ketanji Brown Jackson, right? In the Supreme Court. Do you know how much harder she had to work to get to that position than, say, Amy Coney Barrett, for example?
Yep. You Great know, point.
It is so interesting. And I was listening to the Supreme Court, you know, the live coverage of this hearing about the insurrection, mm-hmm. and Ketanji Brown Jackson, just listening to her, was so much more better prepared, so much more eloquent, and had a much greater grasp of the argument than anybody else mm-hmm. that I was hearing, because she has had to evolve at a much deeper rate mm-hmm. in order just to live and also to avoid. I mean, you know, the police still execute Black people on the side of the road. You know, this has really been the great lesson that I have had is exposing myself to the Black American story mm-hmm. in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I really think that everybody needs to, you know, make more effort, because I don't, you know, they gloss over slavery in public schools, don't they? You know, they kind of leave large chunks out these days. And that's why the Christian right is homeschooling kids, yes. because they can eradicate and whitewash that history completely.
Right.
And that is the plan going forward for the far right, is to, you know, get, if you're a girl, marry young, marry a Christian conservative, have lots of kids, and educate them at home. Right. That's
With
the plan.
With their curriculum that ignores science and mathematics and history and
social studies.
Yeah, social studies, exactly. Yeah, I think both of us are lifelong learners. We love to expose ourselves deliberately to other points of view because we know it makes us better people to have the ability to look at reality from many different points of view, and to also be able to discriminate which points of view have grounding and substance versus just right. someone who has a famous TikTok celebrity, but they have no substance.
Yeah. There's so much to learn and to understand. And, you know, I'm like a sponge, right? So I'll take it all. I even love subjects that I didn't think I knew much about. I mean, the new one, which I think is very interesting, is this story of the fall of Boeing as a company. Hmm. Because this talks about American exceptionalism. Hmm. And what people don't know is there is huge rivalry between, you know, Seattle-based Boeing and European Airbus. These are the two major aircraft manufacturers. Meanwhile, Boeing's letting planes fly with a hole in the side.
Yeah, forgetting right? to put the and, bolts and with quality
forgetting
control.
Forgetting to put the bolts back in. Yeah. And, you know, that story might on the outside seem a simple story about airplanes. It's not about airplanes. It's about culture, it's about corporate culture, it's about greed, and it's about American exceptionalism. Mm. And so, you know, if you want to really get into the weeds of the American story, the modern American story about profit, rampant profit, look at how much more profit Boeing makes than Airbus makes. You know, Airbus is five countries. that come together to make airplanes. Mm. One, you know, Spain makes the wings and the UK makes the undercarriage.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So you've got cross culture. You've got different countries looking at each other's work. Right. You've got this kind of constant oversight. Mm-hmm. And here in the US, the FAA allowed Boeing to self-certify.
Right.
And unfortunately, 346 people died in two aircraft crashes of the 737 MAX. Mm. And, you know, even now, when Boeing put out a press release about the Boeing 737 MAX, they don't call it the MAX. They call it the 737-900 series. That's not the plane. They rename it to try and brainwash people into forgetting the MAX. In fact, someone set up a website now so that if you book a flight, you can check to see if it's a plane, if it's a Boeing 737 MAX or not. So you can choose not to fly on it. I have avoided flying on that plane over the last few years since those two crashes. And I was right to do so because, you know, now it turns out...
I have a trip coming up. I have to check on the plane.
You have to check. But the cultural story of Boeing is fascinating. Mm. And it really does open a door on corporate culture and greed.
Yep.
And shareholders and all that whole story. And so that's what I would kind of recommend.
And I'll just come back to why we need government regulation to look after the average citizen, the average consumer, because we can't trust any organization that's centered on profit to do the extra effort to do the quality control checks because it will reduce their profit margin. We can't trust that. We need to have objective measures and people who are committed to safety. Period.
I had to upgrade my healthcare and leave one company and join another because I discovered once I joined this new healthcare company that none of the doctors that they were offering me were board certified.
Oh boy.
They were all bottom feeders. And so I had to pay an extra $300 a month to get still the similar package, but with a different company where I had more access to board certified doctors.
Right.
It's so crazy that we're having to go on Yelp to find out and cross-reference whether or not this doctor we're going to go and see might accidentally kill us. That's not normal.
No.
And unfortunately, it has become normalized in the U.S.
Nope. Anthony Davis, you have a fascinating life story. You said, Steve, let's focus on my work as a journalist, but you really are a very interesting person. Maybe you'll be willing to share more about your other lives prior to coming to the U.S. But as we wrap up, I know we both are grateful to the Midas Touch Network for helping to give us a platform, a bigger platform. And but final words that you want to share with my listeners?
Vote. I mean, I really don't think we should sign off with anything anymore without including those four letters because, you know, this is a crucial crossroads for the U.S. I want to be able to stay here. I want to get citizenship. I want my kids to grow up and have a prosperous life and not live in a country that denies climate change despite being the second biggest polluter on the planet.
Right.
So the only way to do that is to vote. And this election, forget Joe Biden. Vote for democracy.
Right.
And you know, just get us through this crossroads. It's really important.
Yep. So I will go a little further than you and say, try to register someone new who's a citizen and educate them. I did a fascinating interview with Louise Dubay of iCivics.org. It was Sandra Day O'Connor's nonprofit teaching civics education. People need to understand how government's supposed to work, why it was structured intentionally to prevent abuse of power, things that these authoritarians are trying to break down. So I say, you know, you should be registered and make sure to vote, but especially if you're connected to anyone in battleground states, support efforts to, find people who've never voted, educate them, sign them up, and also warn people there's going to be a lot more deep fakes coming, people, where all kinds of disinformation is abounding. Find trustworthy sources. I consider Anthony Davis trustworthy resource. Listen to his programs and learn and stay grounded. Keep your eye on freedom and democracy. That would be my add to your.
I would agree. And if anybody wants to join the 5 minute news community, we now are offering memberships on the YouTube channel and on Patreon. And I'm putting content out every day where I try and explain some of the complexities of the kind of political landscape.
Yeah, and support Anthony Davis and his efforts. You're a good man. Thank you for your good work, and I look forward to talking again and hanging out in person, hopefully sometime.
You bet. Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
That's it for today's episode of The Influence Continuum. I've been your host, Dr. Stephen Hassan. Theme music for the podcast is by Nasser Malik. To keep up to date with me and happenings that I think are important, please visit my website at freedomofmind.com. There you'll find in-depth articles about cults, mind control, and other relevant topics. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at CultExpert. If you want to develop a comprehensive understanding of these topics, I highly recommend my books, Combating Cult Mind Control, Freedom of Mind, and The Cult of Trump, in that order. These books are a culmination of 45 plus years of experience and will really help you grasp the complex web of undue influence. I have also launched a new 9-hour online course for anyone interested in a deep dive into issues related to recovering from undue influence in all forms. While this course is designed for clinicians, everyone can benefit. Remember, love is stronger than mind control. And thanks for listening.